at 590 WKZO. Raj Taylor taking you home this afternoon. And boy, do we have a busy afternoon. Right out of the chute, we're going to talk to Representative Sarah Roberts from St. Clair. You know, we just got Ontario to stop sending us their garbage, and now they want to send us their nuclear waste. And we'll find out from Representative Roberts if that's a good idea or not. We'll talk to Robin Nichols. She is the head of the union for governmental workers that work at the Defense Logistics Center and at the VA hospital in Battle Creek. And we'll find out what the government shutdown means for those folks. At 4:10, we'll talk to Dottie Lynch, CBS News political analyst, and we'll talk to her about where do we go from here? How do the Republicans get themselves out of this situation that they've put themselves and the country into? And what's going to happen on the way to the debt ceiling? That's, what, maybe 10 days down the road. Well, we'll pick Dottie Lynch brain and see what she thinks. And then just before the end of the show, we're going to talk to Ann Lipsey. She is the big kahuna at Loaves and Fishes. And we'll find out how the government shutdown, the federal government shutdown, is going to make it harder to feed hungry people here in the Kalamazoo area. That coming up this afternoon on 590 WKZO.
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
78 degrees, a beautiful day out there. Let's find out if it's nice in Lansing. Joining us now, Representative Sarah Roberts from St. Clair. Good afternoon, Sarah. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. It's a beautiful day in Lansing.
Oh, good, good. As I said leading into the show, we just got Ontario to stop sending us their garbage, and now they want to send us their nuclear waste. What are your thoughts on storing that less than a mile off of Lake Huron?
Sure, and just to clarify for your listeners, the Bruce Nuclear Power Facility, which is owned by Ontario Power Generation, is proposing to build a deep geologic repository for low and intermediate radioactive waste. And some of this waste could have a life of 100,000 years.
Yeah.
And so the reason that myself and Senator Hopgood have gotten involved in this issue is our concern about potential contamination that could, you know, impact the communities and the drinking water and the local economies that are, you know, downstream from this proposed site.
Now, I consider people from Ontario our neighbors, sort of like they come from Indiana. And is there no place where Ontario can keep their waste in their province instead of bringing it to us?
Well, they in fact want to keep it in the Bruce Peninsula in Ontario. But our concern is how that potential contamination could impact us here in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
But is there an alternative, safer location than this limestone shale geologic repository less than a mile from Lake Huron? I have to believe there is.
Okay. So I have misunderstood all along, it seems. They don't want to bring their waste to Michigan. They just want to put it on the shores of a body of water we share, and that's, what, 100 miles or so from the intakes for water for the Detroit area and that whole metropolitan region. But they're actually going to keep the waste in Ontario.
Exactly.
Ah, well, but still, There's no place in Ontario further away from 20% of the world's fresh water. I'm worried about some of our nuclear facilities sitting on the shores of our big lakes.
Right. No, the question that you're posing is exactly the question that myself and Senator Hopgood posed when we traveled to Kincardine, Ontario yesterday and testified before the Joint Review Panel, which is the body that is going to make the decision whether Ontario Power Generation can build this repository or not. We believe that there's a safer alternative.
And give us a flavor for what a safer alternative might be.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Nowhere in the Great Lakes Basin is nuclear waste buried or proposed to be buried so close to the Great Lakes. And in fact, there's only one active deep geologic repository in the whole United States, which is in New Mexico. And my understanding is that the level of waste that they store, its life is much less than what's being proposed in Ontario. So one of our concerns is that precedent that it's going to set. And in 1978, Michigan, you know, put into state law provisions that relate to how we handle nuclear waste. And under our state law, we would never allow for this type of repository to be built so close to the Great Lakes. And in fact, we store all of our nuclear waste above ground where we can see it and where we can monitor it to make that sure that it's safe over time.
Mm-hmm. What was the Canadian response to your wanting to have an opinion and present your opinion to them?
Right. Well, they opened up the public hearing process, and myself and Senator Hopgood requested to speak. They honored that. They actually worked with us on a date so that we wouldn't have to miss session. And that's why we went up on a Monday. They're actually doing about a month of public hearings, 6 days a week, hearing from all perspectives and persuasions and organizations on this issue. The Ontario Power Generation is on hand, and so is the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission. And it's actually quite a dialogue that takes place during these hearings. So I felt very well received and accepted, and I think they appreciated us sharing our concerns. But, you know, one of the things that came to light is that we just don't really believe in Michigan that there's been very good communication about this project, where the project, you know, was stood on the timeline, and all of the, you know, this is a complicated issue,
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot of different facets to it. And so one of the things we talked about with them is that we just wished Michigan had been more involved in the process. And clearly, we don't have any jurisdiction over this. We can't tell them if they can do it or they can't do it. But going back to your part of having such a rich tradition of collaboration and so many things that we share in common, that I'm hoping our testimony and there's been a petition drive, the thousands of signatures, you know, that have come from Michigan across the country are going to weigh heavy in the decision that this joint panel has to make.
We're talking with Representative Sarah Roberts from St. Clair. Why are they so focused on putting it near one of the Great Lakes? Obviously you can't participate in every one of their hearings, but right. Did you get a feel for why they zeroed in on that location?
Well, it's on the property of the nuclear power plant.
That's
one of the criticisms that many in Ontario are making, is that when a landfill has to be sited in Canada, they have to look at multiple locations. And Ontario Power Generation never looked outside of the footprint of the nuclear facility.
Oh, so they had decided sort of that's where they wanted to put it.
Well, right, and it just so happened that there was a 450-million-year-old lime shale rock formation,
mm-hmm.
you know, where that they argue that they can store this stuff safely. The fact is, it's impossible for any scientist or geologist to guarantee the geological safety of that repository, particularly
right.
over time. And I feel that we have, you know, an obligation not just to our generation, but to future generations to protect and preserve, you know, our shared waters, which mm-hmm. is, in this case, you know, Lake Huron, St. Clair River, and Lake St. Clair.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this could create issues for both countries through all of the Great Lakes if the contamination were to start getting into the lake itself.
Absolutely.
The State Department of Environmental Quality, have they testified? Are they involved in at least representing Michigan in this equation?
Well, I currently have a request to meet with the Department of Environmental Quality on this particular issue. I know that there has been a little bit of outreach to that department, and I know that they have supplied some comments. I would not say that the comments were a full-fledged, you should do this, it's a great idea. It was a very technical response in terms of like geologic rock formations. And you know, I'm not a scientist or a geologist.
Right.
But I would say that it sent a mixed message. And so that's why I want to follow up with the DEQ, with the Office of the Great Lakes, and I've requested to meet with the governor and the governor's staff to really talk through this to make sure that they have all of the information.
Are you aware of any other states that have wanted to represent their piece of geography in this matter in Ontario? Has Ohio or Pennsylvania or New York, the states downstream in the Great Lakes as they flow out through the St. Lawrence, have any other states gotten involved?
Not to my knowledge, but I think part of that is they may not be aware of it.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I learned about this in 2007 when I was serving as a county commissioner in Macomb County, and then I never heard about it again. So it wasn't until recently where I learned they were moving forward, and I thought, wow, I didn't even know that they were moving forward on this proposal, and that's why I got involved again to oppose it and to try to stop it. But this is something they've been working on for over 10 years.
Oh.
And that's been one of the problems. Is if you say, well, I reached out to the governor's staff in 2005, well, we had a different governor back then, right? And we have term limits in Michigan. And, you know, there's similar, I think, challenges in other states. And perhaps, I don't even know if they've reached out to Pennsylvania. I don't know if they've reached out to New York or Ohio.
Interesting. I'm appalled and sort of amazed that nobody else knows about it, but this is a program being run in a different country, not a neighboring state where there are direct connections. But I'm surprised that it's been kept this quiet this long. That surprises me.
Yes, and I will tell you, every single person that I talk to about this, regardless of age, gender, political persuasion, their general response is, I can't believe they're considering doing this.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. What kind of a timeline is this project working on? When would they see construction actually beginning?
That for sure. The Joint Review Panel is going to continue taking testimony through mid-October. They will then take 90 days. It's a three-person panel. They'll take 90 days to review the testimony, and then they make a recommendation to the Ontario Minister of the Environment. The Minister of Environment then reviews that recommendation and then makes a recommendation to the Cabinet. So won't actually ever go through Parliament.
Okay.
So we're thinking, you know, early next year is a possibility.
Ah, okay. Well, I'm sort of concerned about this, and I am happy to know, to learn that they aren't thinking about bringing it to Michigan, but I'm not any more comfortable with them storing it on the shore of Lake Huron than I am us doing it on the shore of Lake Michigan. And I appreciate your being on top of this, and I'm going to watch the issue now. And when there are developments, would you come back and let us know what's going on with this?
I would be happy to, and if I can, there's a great website, www.stopthegreatlakesnuclearedump.com, and they actually have a petition drive going. They have, I believe, over 35,000 signatures right now from Canadians, people from Michigan, and every state in the country, and we're trying to get that to 100,000 signatures by the end of the year to send a really strong statement.
Sure.
So that's something that you can do and the listeners at home can do as well.
Great. Would you give that website one more time?
Sure. It's www.stopthegreatlakesnuclearedump.com.
Thank you. I appreciate your joining us this afternoon.
Thank you so much for covering the story.
You betcha.
Take care.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
That was Representative Sarah Roberts from St. Clair. And right from the get-go, I had the wrong impression. I thought they were wanting to bring their nuclear waste to Michigan and storing it on the shores of Lake Huron. And as I told Representative Roberts, I'm not any more comfortable with the Canadians storing it in an inappropriate place than I am us storing it in an inappropriate place. 78 degrees, 325 at 590 WKZO. Raj Taylor with you on a Tuesday afternoon. It is Tuesday, yeah. No, it isn't. It is Wednesday. You know, when you're an old guy, you get confused on exactly what day of the week it is, especially since I watched news last night and none of my regular TV programs. At any rate, we got a busy afternoon ahead of us. Robin Nichols will join us right after we talk to AccuWeather and get an updated forecast and our weather word of the day. Robin Nichols is the president of the local union representing federal workers in Battle Creek, and we'll find out just how many people have joined the ranks of the unemployed and what their union is able to do to help their members as they work their way through this drought of income that perhaps they hadn't planned on. At 4:10, we'll talk to Dottie Lynch, CBS News political consultant. We'll find out, is there a way out of this fiasco? And will we find our way out of this crisis before we reach yet another manufactured crisis, and that's the debt ceiling? We'll talk to Dottie at 4:10 about that. And then lastly, we'll talk to Ann Lipsey and find out what happens if we run out of food stamp money.
CBS News Update.
Well, we're experiencing sort of a fantasy fall here. Another beautiful day, 77 degrees. Let's find out how long the weather continues. And joining us now is Carl Babinski. Oh, there we go, Carl.
Right, that's okay.
I got you now. Hi, Carl.
Hello, how are you?
Good. How long is this weather going to continue?
Well, it looks like this nice warm weather. We have another one in store for tomorrow. Looks like upper 70s once again. And for that matter, even tonight, we'll feel, I guess, for October standards, rather balmy out there as we only drop down to 59. And it looks like the last really warm day will come on Saturday. It looks like both Friday and Saturday will have highs in the lower 80s. But then there will be a rather strong cold front moving through on Saturday, so watch out for some strong storms. The main threat there, some gusty winds, some large hail possible with those. Behind that, we return to more, typical temperatures for this time of the year. Sunday and Monday, we'll be back down into the low 60s.
And where should we be this time of year, Carl?
Right now, upper 60s is the average high for early October.
So we're not going to get abnormally cold. We're going to stop being abnormally warm.
That's right.
Okay. Does this signal a change in the larger weather patterns, or are we likely to see more warm air come this way as the fall continues?
Yeah, it looks like looking longer range, there will continue to be opportunities for some of this warmer air to continue to surge northward. And we will enter into a little bit more of an active storm track here over the next couple of weeks. So the warmth will likely not be as prolonged as what we've been experiencing, but there will continue to be some mild spells here right through the rest of the month.
We had been running way ahead from normal moisture-wise so far this year until we got to September. Do we see any rain out there in the forecast?
We do, for that matter. It looks like starting late tonight as we get toward daybreak, there will be a couple of showers moving through. Nothing too widespread or really to put a dent into the dryness that we've been experiencing. But as we go through the day tomorrow and through Friday, there'll be a couple rounds of showers and storms, so at least some opportunities to receive some rainfall. I think average amounts anywhere between a half to three quarters of an inch. If you combine tomorrow into Friday, locally higher amounts if you get stuck under one of those heavier downpours. And then Saturday, I think that's the day where we see more of a widespread swath of showers and storms move through with that cold front. But unfortunately, with the rainfall on Saturday, there could be some severe weather with that as well.
Oh, okay. Before I let you go, what's going on in the Gulf? Any development of that tropical system?
Nothing too major. There is an area of disturbed weather right now moving out of the Caribbean into the eastern Gulf of Mexico over the next 24 hours that may have enough time to develop into a tropical depression or a minimal tropical storm toward the end of the week into the weekend, but then that will move up into the central Gulf Coast states. So it looks like we won't have much time to really organize anything stronger than that. The main impact will be to bring an increase in moisture to Mississippi, Alabama, into southern Georgia here as we head into Friday and Saturday.
But it's not going to evolve into a nor'easter or anything for our friends on the East Coast.
No, at this point it does not appear to be that way. In fact, the cool front moving through our region on Saturday, that'll tend to kick all that energy all out to sea as we head into the weekend.
All right. I thank you, sir, and we'll give you full credit for today's beautiful weather.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
590 WKZO time is 3:44. Raj Taylor and joining us now, Robin Nichols. And she is with the union representing federal workers in Battle Creek. Good afternoon, Robin. How you doing? What federal employees in Battle Creek do you represent?
I represent the employees at the Hartdell-Inouye Federal Center. We are all DLA, or Defense Logistics Agency employees, that work under the Department of Defense, and I serve as the local president for Local 1626. I'm also the executive vice president of our council, which is Council 169.
So how is the federal government shutdown impacting your union members?
Well, right now, we're not directly affected. I have about 19 bargaining unit employees that are currently out because of the way that they are funded for their payroll. The majority of us, about 98% of the DLA employees, we are funded through what's called Defense Working Capital Funds, which means that we have a finance model that we are paid by the services that we get from customer purchases. So all of our money is made through customer purchases. Right now we have approximately 10 to 15 days of cash on hand. So we're still working right now, but if this is not resolved within probably about another 12 or 13 days, we will then go out on the streets and we will not be working. We'll be furloughed with everyone else.
Okay. The people who have lost their income at this point, do they qualify for unemployment because of being laid off?
Yes, they do. When they were given their letters on yesterday, they were also given documentation to take to unemployment to let them know that they're no longer without a job right now because they don't have any funding for them. So, yes, they do qualify for unemployment.
Are there any union funds to help up make up the difference between unemployment, which is not living in the lap of luxury, and a more normal income that they were expecting?
More at the national level, we can put the union members in contact with our national office, and they do have some funding that's available. Of course, it's very limited because it's based on membership money, and so it would be based on the money that comes in and what they have available. So it's not a lot of money that's available. From a local aspect of it, we don't really have a lot of funds available, but we do make contributions like to the food bank of South Central Michigan. We also make donations to the AFL-CIO food pantry. So then that way, if our members need food, they can go over and then get food for free and things like that, of that nature.
Okay. How many of your fellow union members have been put out of work across the country? You said your facility has yet to be impacted, at least in a major way. Are other members unemployed at this point in time?
There are members in AFGE that are unemployed right now, and it's over 100,000 employees that are out. Probably more up in, as far as American Federation of Government Employee people, it's probably a little over 200,000 people that are out of the employment right now. And it's, you know, all across the country, and those numbers are increasing. It just depends on how that funding comes in. So that number can be anywhere between, you know, that 200,000 up to about 600,000 or 700,000 people, because there's 800,000 government employees that
now
are being affected.
Okay. And you said you have about 2 weeks of funds before a substantial shutdown in the Defense Logistics Center. Is that correct?
That's correct. We did get a notification from the head of our human resources. Our director out at DLA did send us an announcement on yesterday and said that we have anywhere from, at that time it was 10 to 15 days of cash on hand. So, yeah, we have approximately 2 weeks before we go down. And then there's also the next issue with the debt ceiling. If that does not, you know, happen, if they don't raise the debt ceiling, well, then regardless of having that money on hand, we could still go out of business at that point.
Oh, so that would be an independent reason for shutting down, even if we resolve the current funding issues.
Absolutely. They're two different situations. That's correct.
Ah, okay. That's important information to know.
Mm-hmm.
What impact will it have on our military preparedness should the Defense Logistics Center shut down?
Well, you know, right here in Battle Creek, we directly support our warfighters with getting them all their supplies, all the way up to the disposition of the items that they use. So if we shut down, they're not going to be able to get into the system, the cataloging system, to get the supplies that they need, and our warfighters are going to be directly impacted. So right now, it's a really good thing that we're able to still work so that we can support our warfighters. But if this goes into a full government shutdown, we're going to be, you know, the warfighter will be in trouble because we will not be able to provide them the items that they need.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So let me recap. You've got about 20 people who are already out of work, but the bulk of people, their job won't be in jeopardy for another 2 weeks, give or take.
Correct. That's correct.
Okay. I'm certain we'll be touching base with you to find out just how this is impacting your members as time goes on.
Great. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We were talking with Robin Nichols from the union representing workers at the Defense Logistics Center in Battle Creek. 77 degrees at 350 at WKZO Kalamazoo. Let's check out the 590 WKZO newsroom. WKZO.com. AccuWeather forecast, mostly sunny and warm this afternoon. We're going to get to 80, I just know it, 77 now. Increasing cloudiness tonight with a chance of a shower or two late tonight, early tomorrow, and a low of 59. Mostly cloudy, very warm and humid tomorrow. Some showers and thunderstorms around. Another upper 70s to near 80 day. Partly sunny, again very warm with a shower or thunderstorm on Friday, and we actually get into the 80s, 81, the predicted high. Coming up later this afternoon at 4:10, we're going to find out from Dottie Lynch how we're going to find our way out of the fiasco in Congress. What are we going to do to get the government working again? And can we get it working again before we perhaps shut it down by not paying our bills, by deciding to not raise the debt ceiling? And when we were talking to Robin Nichols, I learned that either of these things could end up costing large numbers of people in Battle Creek their livelihood here in the next 2 weeks. She said the Defense Logistics Center has cash on hand to operate for maybe two more weeks. And even if the current budget issue is resolved, they're back in the firing line in just a couple of weeks with the debt ceiling. And then lastly, in the 4 o'clock hour, and not unimportant, we're going to talk to Ann Lipsey. She's in charge of Loaves and Fishes here in town. And in the not too distant future, there is the possibility of the food stamp program completely shutting down, just running out of money. And are the food banks in the area, are they prepared for the influx of business that they're going to get when people can't get their food stamps? So we got a lot coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. Let's take a quick look at gas prices. I filled up in Plainwell this morning at $3.29, but there's a number of stations in Kalamazoo at $3.29 or $3.30. The lowest price in town is, well, starting in Richland and down Gull Road right to downtown. The price on that route, $3.27. In Pawpaw, the gas prices are $3.37 everywhere, except up at M40 and M43. You can save yourself 3 cents there. Down Plainwell Way, Three Rivers Way, $3.36, the best price. That's at Meyer and all the other gas stations along 131. Nearby in Sturgis, gas is still $3.22. Battle Creek, best price is on the far east side of Battle Creek, but it doesn't match Kalamazoo, $3.33. But still, the outstanding bargain in the state is at St. John's, $3.17 a gallon there. Maybe 20 miles north of Lansing. Your guess why gas is as cheap there as it is better than mine. I don't understand much about gas pricing, but why it's $3.17 in St. John's. Maybe they struck oil up there. I don't know. That's still the bargain in the state. But in Kalamazoo, $3.27, the best price, right along Gull Road, starting in Richland, all the way to downtown. Tigers play Friday night, 9:10 p.m. You'll hear it live right here on 590 WKZO. They take on Oakland, and that's the beginning of the playoffs. A big weekend in sports. Western takes on Toledo. You'll hear that on Saturday at 2 p.m. on our sister station, 96.5 WZOX. U of M takes on Minnesota at 2:30 Saturday afternoon on 1660 The Fan. And Michigan State plays Iowa at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday right here on 590 WKZO. And CBS News coming up at the top of the hour. And as promised, Dottie Lynch joins us following that.
The trifecta continues after CBS News and Kalamazoo's news from the WKZO.com newsroom on 590 WKZO Kalamazoo.